Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 418 of the Roguecast, recorded May 30th, 2023. Read the book! We approach the beginning of summer, the end of school,
Has summer not formally started yet?
It is summer. Yes, it is formal right. Summer.
Oh, okay. Yay!
Yeah.
But good job, teachers who've survived the year.
Yeah. So we went to karaoke for a friend's birthday on Friday night, and the place was packed and hopping.
Yep.
And I was like, "That's
it was as packed as I've ever seen it."
That's a bunch of teachers in there. We were talking about it because we were in a private room.
Yeah.
Because we fancy.
Yes.
And also,
I'm scared to go up on the main stage.
And Dave's scared to go on the main stage.
Yep.
And so we're in there, and our waiter comes in, hears us talking about, you know, there's got to be a ton of teachers out there. They're free of kids for 3 months. There's like going nuts out there. And he's like, oh, yeah. And I guess he was talking about there was a group of teachers in one of the rooms.
Yeah.
That was just like completely rowdy.
Right.
So
I believe he said he had been groped by them.
Good on you, teachers. grope those waiters at
maybe we shouldn't get behind that one.
Maybe not. Maybe okay. Not that. But enjoy your time.
But I understand these teachers need to cut loose.
Yes.
So, yes.
It is not an easy job, especially the rest, in Texas.
Oh, my God. The rest of us will, of course, be melting from the heat. Randy will be living like a lizard.
Love it.
And enjoying it, sunning
yeah.
himself out on the fence.
I will.
Occasionally inflating his throat sack.
Yep.
And you like the heat, right?
I do like the heat.
That's your time.
I love me the summer.
Well, it's your time to shine, right?
I live in Texas. Why else would you live here?
That is a very fair question.
I feel every year that point gets better.
Yeah.
Every year I'm like, the heat is the reason to stay here. Why else would you be here?
They're like, chilly? Is it going to be chilly?
I like barbecue.
All right.
Really like the Cowboys? I don't know. Something. Anyway,
But here we are. Oh, we're a man down this week.
We're a man down this week, right? Nick had a Memorial Day outing, and his dog is not feeling so good, and
yeah.
So Nick did not get a lot of sleep, so we gave him the day off. It's also a lighter week. We were able to handle it. It's a fifth week, which if anyone knows, fifth weeks means 4 weeks of comics divided across 5 weeks, and usually the last week there's a little less stuff. So it's a lighter week this week.
Yeah.
Which is say, good time to catch up on all the stuff that came out this month, because there's been, if you haven't had a chance, if you've been waiting for a light week, we got Green Lantern 1, Green Arrow 1 and 2, Titans number 1, the new Nightwing,
Avengers,
Cyborg, Avengers, all three of the books, the We Are Legends, the AAPI line from DC.
Yes.
City Boy, Spirit World, and the Vigil.
The Vigil, yep.
All good books.
All stuff we
like. So there's like a whole bunch of stuff to check out. We also did get a restock of those Disney covers, if people have not gotten those yet.
Yeah, those flew off the shelf so quickly anytime we've been able to get them that we were like, it looks like we can get them at least one. Maybe this is probably the last time, so if you have an interest, this would be a good time to get them.
We also got a restock of Fantastic Four number 7, a.k.a. number 700, a.k.a. the single Doctor Doom story that Ryan North does, which is really good.
Yes.
We've been really liking this book.
Yes, there's a lot going on there. I think we also, when we were talking about it, mentioned there's a it's just like what would be the equivalent of a post-credits sequence,
yeah.
But it's a sort of a new status quo for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. Now, we'll talk about comics, of course. There are some new comics as well this week, but if you've been waiting for a slower week to catch up, this is that week.
Yeah.
But as a result, we were able to handle things pretty easily without Nick, and
but send him your good thoughts, send his dog your good thoughts. It's probably, it seems like it's nothing super serious.
It should be fine, yeah.
But we'll have him back next week. All should be well.
Yeah. Roughly for dogs. My dog had dentals, had to have some teeth pulled.
Blah.
She's doing better, but she was having a rough couple of days.
Yeah, that's not fun.
So, it's just two of us this week. And also, Pride starts next week, or I believe this weekend.
Yeah.
And now, if you know our story, you know that Pride is a big thing all year round for us.
Right.
But we do this year. We've got our Pride stickers. If you haven't seen them, they're free Pride stickers.
We got those early, and we were really happy with how they came out.
But I believe Serena is going to put together a Pride comics display.
Yep.
So that'll be coming out.
And hopefully, just the general feature areas we always keep are a reminder that this is always something important. This is something that's very close to the store's heart and is always going to be built into our premise.
Correct. All right. Let's talk about some games. We did get some game stuff. We got last week Horizons of Spirit Island, which is it's basically the intro version of the co-op game, the anti-colonialist
Right. So, Spirit Island is a game that's already been big. Mm-hmm. It's been a big thing. This is the one where you play...
Spirits
trying to ward off the colonizers, essentially, yeah. Right?
You and the natives of this island,
yeah.
And you got these awesome names like Spirit, like Fire Who Moves in the Darkness, and that's kind of
yeah,
all these
right,
powers.
Right.
I played it; it's great fun. There's enough expansions you can get like 50 different spirits.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good co-op game. It goes up like 6 players, I think. It's a really good game, but it can be a little intimidating and a little long.
It's like kind of one of those deeper games,
yeah.
Okay.
Horizons of Spirit Island is a sort of a stripped down version of it. I've played it; it's very similar to Spirit Island, but it's sort of more approachable. So if you've been curious about it and you want to try a good co op game, I think it goes I think it's 2 to 3 players.
You know what's interesting is the industry actually has a pretty strong series of successes. I think with doing these sort of stripped down versions of good games,
yeah.
You know, you can look at sometimes 2-player versions of a game,
well,
or
Splendor
even
Duel, for example, is fantastic.
Splendor Duel, or like a dice game version of the same thing that's like a quick play dice thing.
Yep.
You know, even all ages versions of these things sometimes. But like, they usually do them pretty well. And so, yeah, that's a cool idea. I assume Randy's going to have some of the, you know, some of the mechanics that everybody likes about the main game.
Yeah.
It's just going to do them in a kind of brisker way. So, yeah that's. If you like the idea of stepping on some colonizers, and who wouldn't, then say the name of this new one.
It is called Horizons of Spirit Island.
Got it.
We also got new Pathfinder Ventures, a new adventure path, and a new standalone adventure, mm-hmm. as well as Starfinder Ports of Call. This is, I think it's a dozen new planets in the Starfinder world.
Cool.
Including Galarian World. I don't know if you know, Dave, in Starfinder...
Galarian disappeared.
Galarian vanished. Well, Galarian World is not the reappearance of Galarian. It is a planet-sized amusement park trying to reenact the Pathfinder version. So you have, like, mascots in goblin costumes.
That's fantastic.
And Hell Knights and everything else. But it is a theme park for space adventurers.
I have a little bit of Pathfinder stuff, Starfinder stuff, even though I haven't played it. And I've read through some of their lore. I really like their lore.
It's a great... I own all of it.
Yeah.
I've only played, like, through one of the adventure paths. Yeah. But... it's such a good world.
Yeah, it's a very cool setting. Also, by the way, I'm going to cheat slightly, even though we're not on comics yet, and say that a Pathfinder comic came out this week,
yep.
too.
Yep, we'll talk about that.
And we'll talk about it, yeah, as we get there.
Lord of the Rings 5th Edition. This is from Free League Publishing, the guys who do Alien, Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
This is the 5th Edition D&D version of Lord of the Rings.
Is it the version of The One Ring?
I believe it is, but converted over for... because they do the One Ring game as well.
Right. And for people who don't know, the One Ring was basically just a smaller game company, not, you know, Wizards of the Coast, who had a pretty successful, and up to and including a recent second edition, I believe, of it.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings game, which I would say was a little bit more influenced by the books than the movies.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can choose how your vibe that you want to play with it. But it was interesting to have something that did that, you know, so more low magic and all that stuff.
Right.
But there's no doubt 5th edition is the approachable edition of our era, and so they did the D&D 5th edition adaptation of it.
Yeah, and if you know Free League, their stuff is always beautiful. They've been doing, they don't print, but they're the ones who distribute Morkborg.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, One Ring is them, Alien, Blade Runner, Tales from the Loop.
People trust them with licenses.
Yep. And so these are very, very pretty books. And also these are through Bits and Mortar, which I don't know if people are familiar with this program, but basically if you buy the game in store from us,
yep.
You can email us. We'll send you a copy of the PDF to your email.
Yeah. Buy a physical copy, get it a digital copy.
For free.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you want that?
I don't know.
Start something?
What do you hate PDFs? Maybe you do.
Maybe you're the Unabomber. Maybe all technology is bad to you. Maybe. And so you're like, well, that's particularly hateful.
Maybe you're worried that the email will come through and infect you, like it does in a comic that we're going to talk about this week.
Oh my God!
Turn you evil.
Yes. Although that comic is going to be an interesting discussion.
Yeah. All right. We also got a restock of Foambrain, which is one of our dice companies.
Yep.
So we got some plastic dice, some metal dice, some roll up dice tubes, some big metal dice that you can do like 35mm. They're big D20s.
Yep.
But also the new moving eye dice, which are on our TikTok. You can see them there.
Imagine an eyeball suspended within liquid inside the dice, so that as you move the turn the dice around in your hand or roll the dice or whatever, you'll see the eye moving with it.
Serena tested these dice out and rolled them out. There's something very satisfying about watching the eyeball roll around in the die.
After, oh, that's cool.
As it settles.
I did a quick TikTok for the store, and it just shows me like kind of turning the dice over in my hands and seeing how the eye moves. But yes, I suppose rolling dice really is the way to see it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, come
very,
check them out.
Very cool. Come and take a look. They're a little pricey, but it's because Liquid Core tends to be a little pricey.
Yeah, they have to use futuristic things for that.
But they're very cool.
It's and probably if you're making lasers in some way.
If you're looking for a gift for your DM or someone yeah. that this is a good one. We got another Kickstarter thing, Castles by the Sea. This is a game of building sandcastles.
Okay.
What's notable about it is it's a Kickstarter bundle. So basically, when it comes out, it's going to be $55. Right now, for $60, you get the main game, the expansion, and wooden tokens for $60.
Okay.
Which is a pretty good deal.
That sounds like a pretty good deal.
I think we've got like four more of them left. And it's from Brotherwise Games, who are the people who made Boss Monster.
Okay.
And Call to Adventure. Both really good games, both very different games.
Oh, yeah. Those are very different games.
So these guys have not really failed yet. They have another game called Unearthed that is out of print right now that I really liked. It was a sort of an exploration with a tribe of dice.
Yeah.
These guys have really not failed it yet. This game looks like another great game, and so you might be worth checking that out before the Kickstarter copies run out.
Mm-hmm.
We also got Stat Trackers. So this right. is a new thing that's a D&D compatible thing.
Right. They are. This is essentially tools for dungeon masters or players, I guess, but primarily it's a dungeon master thing.
Oh, yeah.
Although, I guess, game. Also, this is full, it also fall under a player might want to buy this for their dungeon right. master, too.
So they have a DM screen with an original piece of art that's really cool.
Yep.
And is arranged. It's for 5th edition.
Yep.
And the kind of the cool thing, you don't need. You can use this with any DM screen, because the stat trackers, what they are, is little foldable, like, think of it as like a bookmark.
Right.
And they fold at the top, and so you hang them on the DM screen. And on the player side, you get this piece of art that shows the monster.
Right.
Or the NPC, because there's NPCs.
But that doesn't have the stats.
Doesn't have the stats. On the other side is all the stats where the DM can see.
Right. You need to see that. The players don't. They get to look at a cool picture.
And so if you're using any other DM screen, it'll cover it. If you're using their DM screen, it covers some of the rule stuff, but all the conditions are along the bottom, so you can still see it, even if you have, like, 16 monsters up there,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty cool. And they've come as little packets of, like, 50 different monsters, or 50 different NPCs, or there are two box sets. One is, like, all NPCs, and one is all the monsters, so you can get all everything.
Right, right.
Pretty cool, and we've got samples of all of it, so you can come in and take a look and see what all the art looks like. And
yeah, they're kind of like little rings, like color swatches are yeah. in places.
So those are all with our spell cards,
right?
And
right
codexes.
Up front, yeah, right up front with our dice
with
now.
Some of the dice,
those
yeah.
did used to be in the back, right across from D&D, but we're moving some stuff around, and so they've moved up front with the dice now.
They also do a cool little thing: these little mushrooms.
Oh yeah.
So these are you buy like a tokens. Pack. It's a blind box pack.
Yes.
And it comes with little glass mushrooms. They're like these wee little mushrooms.
Yep.
And they're different colors, and there's a little guidebook, and each mushroom has a different ability. There's one that's like a blue one that gives you swimming and water breathing for an hour.
Right.
There's one that gives you flight. There's one that you can throw and it's like a spore grenade. And what you can do is you can basically give these out to your players as little potions. So they're like one-use right. events.
You know what I could also see you doing? If you had like, you know, a number of them and you put them in like a little felt bag, like a little dice bag,
yep.
and like say, okay, you know, you get one of these little magic shrooms and Let's see what you get, you know.
You can also do it as a, like, inspiration thing. Like, if someone does something cool, you're like, ah, you get a mushroom.
Right.
Anyway, these are really cool. We've got demos of those as well. You can take a look at them. They're neat little, they're little toys.
I feel like it also works if you're playing Super Mario RPG.
That is true. Or a Myconid campaign.
That's true.
Yeah.
Or if you're tripping balls.
Or if you're tripping balls.
In the desert.
Reminder again, the Free RPG Day is coming up. I believe we are about 3 weeks out. No, 4 weeks out. It's June 24th.
Sir? Yeah, okay.
And then we are also prepping for our Board Game Day, July 15th, which we have put out a poll, which you can find on our Facebook and on our website, of which games you would like to play. We've got about, I think, 18 games on the list. We're going to have time for 8 of them. So we're kind of wanting to see what people want to play.
I think you posted, maybe this might have been when you shared it on your own page, Randy, but did make the point, it's like, don't you know, go to the selection and pick just your favorite game.
Yeah, don't be only if you're going to come, we'd like to know what you want us to run.
Right.
We're trying to make sure we have games we want to play. Don't just be like, oh, I really like that game. That doesn't help us. In fact, that hurts us.
Right.
But so far, Flamecraft is running away from it, so we will almost certainly be running Flamecraft, unless it is still out of stock. Currently, it is out of stock. I'm hoping we're going to get a back order.
Right.
If we don't have it, we probably will not run that one, but otherwise, we'll probably run that. Very likely, Warriors of Kryn and Starship Captains will be in there.
Yep.
Warriors of Kryn is the Dragonlance co-op board game.
Yep.
And then also high in the running, Marvel Dice Throne, Horrified, Hamlet Clank.
Surely the Star Wars deck building game must make it in there.
It's not in there.
All right, but people, you should still run it. People are going to want to play that.
Well, we've got Star Realms as a possibility.
They just don't know what they want.
But, yeah, there's a... So
you don't get me wrong. Star Realms is probably a better game. It's cool.
But, yeah, so you've got a poll if you want to go vote to see if you're going to come out.
It's on the store's Facebook page.
It's on the store's Facebook page and also on the store's website.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about comics for the week, the May 31st comics.
Yep.
So, first up, DC has a Pride special with multiple covers, anthology. These are always really good. There's a... I don't even know if it'll still happen by the time this podcast comes out, but there's one that's like a tarot-style Harley and Ivy with foil. It is super cool.
Right, it's really good.
But there's a bunch of different covers.
They're all good.
There's also a Power Girl special.
Yep. The Power Girl special, you know, people have been reading Action Comics, right? Action Comics is like the Superman family book.
Right.
And anybody who's kind of in his circle, who's like, especially the people who actually are stationed in Metropolis now, but I think that's, you know, it's going to be like Superboy, Supergirl,
right.
His adopted kids from space thing.
Right. His adopted kids from space.
Which I don't know much about, but they're there.
There, sure.
And
I don't know their names, but they're from space and they're adopted.
And Power Girl is in the mix. Now, I should say, Power Girl has had a confusing origin over the decades. Sometimes she is like, what, also a Kryptonian. Sometimes she's like a version of Supergirl from an alternate world, one of the other alternate Earths. Sometimes she has mystic connections, like ties to Atlantis in the DC setting.
Is Power Girl kind of like Hawkman they keep?
A little bit. Yeah, they're never quite sure. That said, this is an interesting story she is kind of in one of those transitional states right now, and it's like, I guess I'd say, see if you like it. Mm-hmm. What was the event that DC had where everybody's powers kind of got a little switch up or a jump? The recent thing. Lazarus.
Yes, Lazarus Planet, yes.
Lazarus Planet.
Yes.
Right, so that is the cause of it. And so this is a one-shot adventure focusing on her, kind of her new powers, and let's see. I'm trying to find where I can describe how her powers work, and in her narration here, she says, "The Lazarus rains changed me. In a single instant, I was inundated with an unholy deluge of astral data, a psychic stream of information that never ceases." So she's got some kind of weird, like, kind of more psychic-type powers at
the
moment.
That's a weird call. She's always been, like, super strong and flighty.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I think she can still do that.
Sure.
But maybe she's got this too.
Sure.
I don't know.
Okay,
read the book, Randy. Like the old Time Life.
Read the book.
Mysteries of the Unknown series.
A 50-year-old reference that both of us get.
Something like 40 to 30 years old. First of all, I believe even some 90s kids saw this.
Okay,
all right. But anyway, and the other thing is, like, if you happen to, and this is a retro reference too of their own. The backup feature in this, because it's like an oversized issue, features Fire and Ice. Which were prominent but kind of low. They're not super well known DC characters, but they were prominent members of the Justice League International, which is a pretty well known era.
Speaking of 90s kids,
that's like that's 80s too. Oh. But like the Blue Beetle and Booster Gold, it's the goofy era. It's Guy Gardner,
yep.
And all of that stuff. And Fire and Ice were some international heroes. Fire was from Brazil. Ice was from Scandinavia. I think Scandinavia.
The Netherlands. Antarctica.
Iceberg.
Ice Town.
Wherever Elsa is from.
Yes.
She was from all of those places simultaneously.
And also Santa's Workshop.
Yes. Yeah. And the icy reaches of Pluto.
Yes. Somehow, she's in all those places.
Anyway.
Update Wikipedia. You heard it here first.
They were besties back in the day, and this file has, like, a new adventures of theirs. But I think that does also involve Power Girl in it. So, anyway, yeah, Power Girl one-shot is out there. If you're a fan of the character, check it out, see what's going on with her.
This is also there's a week of Star Trek 2023 annual this week.
Oh, yeah.
There's several one-shots and things this week. That happens a lot in 5th weeks. They tend to do sort of one-shots. This is this is part of the current Star Trek series, which is, I don't want to give too much away, but it is post Deep Space Nine. Sisko is running a ship with a lot of the legacy characters, so it's like, old man Scotty, from Voyager.
Right, it's not legacy characters, like they've occasionally done things where people are plucked from the time stream.
No, these all exist in this time
stream.
Data is his second officer, yep. Or his first officer. I'm trying to think Wall is in it. It's got a really good cast.
Yeah.
And, they have the ship, the Theseus. They're on a... It's got experiment technology. Without getting too much into the story, there is a crossover with... there's a Lower Decks character who is in this, who's on their team now.
Right,
and there's also a crossover here with Strange New Worlds and with the original Captain Kirk. And you might be like, how could that be? There's also a nod to the first Star Trek Generations movie, which you'll see in there. You're like, how did that all happen about time travel? Holodeck is how it happens. If you like your holodeck stories... This was an interesting take on a holodeck story, and I really enjoyed it. I thought they did it in such a way where Pike and Shatner, or Shatner's Kirk, don't feel like a cheat. It feels like, oh, those are the characters. It's just a holographic version of them.
Right.
But it's good, and it's a fun done-in-one story. If you've not been reading the Star Trek series, you could jump into this and just kind of see it. And I have a feeling once you do, you'll be like, oh, I kind of want to go and read that Star Trek series now, because all these characters look cool and the ship looks cool.
Somewhat related, my podcast, Text Trek,
yep.
Where we talk about Star Trek and do kind of deep dives on episodes.
Yep.
This Friday, if all goes well, we're going to our live stream. We're going to do an interview with the, what is she, the EIC or whatever of IDW.
Oh.
What's her name? I'm looking here. Heather Antos?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to have her on, and we're going to ask her about Star Trek comics and what it's like wrangling all that, and maybe some cool stuff they have coming up. But yeah, it's going to be fun to talk to her. And the Trek comics, like, IDW has done good with this license. I don't love every single miniseries they put out, but, like, their overall quality level has been high. They've done stuff for almost all the eras. They even did Star Trek animated stuff. What did they cross it over with? Transformers? I think, because it was like the Trek cartoon characters, and the Transformers of the 80s, which, you know, were only about a decade after the Trek cartoon. But anyway, yeah, point just being that they've had a lot of good stuff, and they've, you know, any given era of Trek, you can probably find a comic or miniseries that they've done that have covered it.
Nice. That's really awesome.
Yep.
TextTrek.com?
Yep.
All right. And the live stream is when?
That's going to be 7 o'clock on Friday. Generally probably going to run 7 to 8.30 or 9. And later on we'll edit it down a little bit into a podcast just a few days later. So, you know, if you want to wait and see the edited version, that's fine.
All right.
But the kind of cool thing is people who do the live stream, we interact with the people who are there. You can ask questions. We'll post some of them and possibly use those to ask Heather some questions. So,
very cool. There is also TMNT Saturday Morning Adventures. IDW has had a pretty good look with the D&D Saturday Morning Adventures.
Yep.
And what's the big one that's been going that was the Saturday Morning Adventures?
G.I. Joe.
Yeah,
that was very fun. It was like, you know, all the G.I. Joe comics really are kind of their own slightly more realistic thing.
Yeah.
But that was one that was a full-on homage to the red and blue laser shooting ones,
yep.
The nobody gets killed ones, the cartoon with all its magic and stuff. Like, each time they do one of these cartoons, they try and the animated or Saturday Morning Adventures ones, they try and get to the heart of whatever the cartoon was about.
Now, of course, TMNT has had lots of cartoon adaptations before.
But this must be the original one, the 90s cartoon.
I actually think they've done one of these before. I think this is the second miniseries.
I think that's right.
So more of that.
These are the Heroes on a Half Shell. Yep. They're party dudes.
They are. They're party dudes. They like pizza.
Cowbunka.
Cowbunka to you, sir. And also to you. We've got, as Dave noted earlier, the Pathfinder Wake the Dead. This is a new Pathfinder comic. It's been a while. I want to say like 5 or 6 or maybe more years. So some of the iconics are back. You'll see Harsk the Dwarf Ranger, but also I see that they've got their iconic monk and their bard and some of those characters, and they are facing off with the undead. I always enjoy this. There's some nice lore. Also, the comics come with like some their stats for their one of their characters, and also some magic items and stuff in here too, which I believe is your first glimpse of Pathfinder Core Revised
earlier this year. That's pretty cool.
As I look at it, I'm looking at the stats for Sela, the champion. Okay, no, this actually is the current Pathfinder. I don't believe they're quite, but they are compatible with it.
Okay. I feel like basically all D&D and Pathfinder comics, anything in that ballpark, you should come with bonus stuff that has stats for the characters and things like that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Next up, we have a new graphic novel from Joe Flood. A name y'all might not know, but he's done a lot of science comics, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the name rings a bell for sure.
He did that Pirates of the Caribbean comic that we loved a few years back.
Yeah, yeah. Was it the one that Chris Schweitzer drew?
Yep. No, he wrote it. He wrote it.
Oh, okay.
Chris Fletcher wrote it. Joe Flood drew it.
Oh, and that was beautifully drawn.
It's gorgeous.
Actually,
yeah.
Now even Randy, even you talking about it makes me want to go back and reread it because it was so good.
We all bought it. Didn't you get a copy?
I did. So yeah. I can reread it.
So this is called Knee Deep. It is a first of 3 graphic novels set 200 years in the future. There's an environmental cataclysm, and the inhabitants live underground in a utopia. A bunch of mutants, renegades, bandits. I see like a robot and maybe a monkey person and a pig person. And
Is this like super bleak or is this fun?
It looks a little bleak.
But is it also an all ages graphic novel?
So I can't tell. Is not an all ages graphic novel.
Oh, interesting.
It is in that it looks like it, but I think this is probably more YA kind of thing.
Right, right. Like something like Maze Runner and Hunger Games.
Like Maze Runner and Hunger Games, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a young girl looking for her family that fled underground. They're dealing with a overzealous mining company that's trying to destroy their underground habitat.
Mm-hmm.
It's got really, really pretty full-color art, and I see a crocodile attack.
Oh.
And it just looks super cool. I would recommend this to people. Give it a look. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but it looks super cool.
Yeah, I think it's one that I want to take a look at. That art is incredibly good.
Yep. We also have a book called Grand Slam Romance, which is a very tawdry-looking queer graphic novel. the tag on the top is, "Getting to Third Base Has Never Been More Magical."
Is it a baseball, softball
thing? It is a softball. So I'm going to read the inside front cover a little bit.
Yeah.
Equal parts romance, softball, and magical girl drama, Mickey Monsoon is the hotshot pitcher of the Bell City Broads, and their team is poised to sweep the league this season. But Mickey is thrown off their game when Astra Maxima, a grade-A hottie, heartbreaker, and home run hitter, shows up to catch for the Gaiety Gals, the Broads' fiercest rival. Astra is flirty, arrogant, and reckless on the field, everything that rule-abiding Mickey hates.
I'm sorry, I'm going to rewind slightly. Did you say Astra Maxima?
I did say Astra Maxima.
Is she from space?
They seem like they might be in space.
Oh, wait. You didn't say...
They're magical girls.
Right, you said magical girls, so...
They're
just
not
in
space.
Just in case people don't know that terminology that well, that's in manga, that's like what Sailor Moon and stuff is. Sort of, in Japan, the superheroes for girls.
Yep.
That actually sounds very fun.
It looks like a lot of fun.
A big, high, melodramatic, maybe slightly magical... softball romance, queer romance thing. Yeah,
the balls are fast, the smooches are spicy, and the girls, magical.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, it looks like fun. It's a book one in a series. This is from Abrams. They've been doing a lot of good stuff like this. I believe they're putting out this in time for Pride. Might be worth a look. It will be on our new wall. Also, some other graphic novels this week. Power of Shazam Volume 2. This is a weird one.
Right. Power Shazam was a, late 80s, early 90s comic?
Early 90s
or maybe
comic.
Just
yep.
90s.
Yep.
That sort of took... it was one of the best runs, I think we would... At least we would say, Randy, on Shazam.
Correct.
Where they kind of treated Shazam with a little bit of a pulp adventure vibe. So if you think Rocketeer, Indiana Jones, Captain America in World War II, all of that sort of vibe was what was going on. And it was really nicely drawn by Jerry Ordway.
So it ran from 1994 to 2010.
Oh, that's farther along than I thought. Yeah. I thought it started in, like, the early 90s.
So a hardcover graphic novel called The Power of Shazam came out, written and painted by Jerry Ordway.
Wait, did you say 2010?
2010.
No, wait, that can't be.
According to fandom.com.
That sounds like it might be right, but I think the 90... Or I'd be wrong, but 94 is probably
right.
No.
2010 was when issue 48 was released as part of the Blackest Night event.
Ah, okay.
So it ran to 99.
Okay.
That's more like it. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Anyway, yes, it's a classic. They did start with a graphic novel that revamped his origins a little bit.
Yep.
And then there was a series that Jerry Orboy wrote, did painted covers for. These covers are gorgeous. And the interior art was by Peter Krause.
Yep.
And it is very much, yeah, like a Rocketeer pulpy style. But he introduced, you know, he brought in Dr. Savannah, Black Adam, also things like The Bulleteer.
Right. Mr. Mind.
Talkie Tawny. All the classics, but also some of the, like, there's a Plastic Man in this issue.
Right. So another sort of, a character that actually wasn't originally owned by DC, you know, but you know, he's a Golden Age character originally. Right.
So the weird thing about this is they reprinted Power of Shazam Volume 1 right before the pandemic hit as a hardcover.
Right.
And
which is, I think I probably missed it because of that, because Randy, you and I know both have an interest in this series.
We both own it, yeah.
And I would like to get it in graphic novel format, but I'd probably get soft cover.
Right.
And so I would have been all over it, but I was like, when we got Volume 2 in this week, I was like, where's Volume 1?
So it is a weird thing in the DC's publishing. They, for whatever reason, Volume 1, which has been out of print for a couple of years now, and no sign of it coming back in, they went ahead and put Volume 2 out as a trade. I'm looking to see if there's anything about the issues that are, what issues are in it here. Okay, so this has some single-issue stories from Showcase, Superboy Plus, Superman, The Man of Tomorrow, The Power of Shazam, number 13 through 23, and The Annual.
Okay.
So it's about 12 issues worth of comics.
Yep.
It's right there in the middle of the run. You don't have to have read Volume 1. I mean, it's Shazam. It's not the hardest thing to get into.
Right.
But if you have any interest in Shazam, I think Dave and I would say, this is the best stuff.
I agree. They found just the right sort of balance. And it's like at a kind of fun adventure. It feels like there's consequences to the actions and real danger.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also got, it's kind of that slightly all-ages adventure-y vibe to it. So
yeah.
It's not, but it's not silly.
No. No, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
She-Hulk by Rainbow Rowell gets a Volume 2 this week.
Right.
If you've
right.
been reading her sort of romance take on She-Hulk.
That's a fun, sometimes strange book.
It is odd. There are 12 issues in now, and they're still, it's just a straight-up romance book with her and Jack of Hearts.
Yeah. He is basically the co-star,
yep.
or like spends a lot of time with it. And as I've often said, I'm a fan of Jack of Hearts.
Yep.
Even I am weirded out about this level of screen time. But it also has had like great art throughout, lots of fun scenes. So I give a recommendation, but like just with like a slight caveat
that it is a romance book with Jack of Hearts.
Right, that is what it is.
We don't usually talk about second or third issues, and because you know usually we're trying to get enough time, but we got a little time this week, so I want to mention a couple.
There's some good ones. Some good ones.
Doctor Strange number 3. It's the yep. third issue of Jed McKay's run, which I've been really enjoying, which started with yep. Death of Doctor Strange.
Right.
Continued through the 12-issue Strange miniseries where Clea was the Doctor Sorcerer Supreme.
Yep. And now, as this new Strange series starts, Stephen Strange is back. He's married to Clea.
He and Clea are married and working together as the Sorcerer right. Supremes.
And, you know, the immediate thing was, like, to kind of respond to some of the things that had happened while he was away,
right.
kind of do some house cleaning, see what's going on. You know, they need to get him up to speed
right.
On, like, what he's missed.
But right now, something is killing Sorcerer Supremes from other dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the backstory. That's sort of what's going on. But this issue is sort of a standalone.
Yeah, if you were to just read, and if you just want to try it out, you could try out this issue, because his big bad, Dormammu,
yep.
shows up basically for what seems to be, what, a yearly combo?
A yearly parley.
Yes. That's funny, because that was the line in the movie, right? Dormammu, I've come to parley, or something.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I think they have suggested, their take on that word in the comic is that it is like kind of what they call their a little, almost a, like a sort of a mental game. It's like a battle of wills.
He refers to it as Cold War at one point. He basically says that they've been in a Cold War.
Yeah. And so he shows up, and just to like set the stage for kind of the dramatic thing, Dormammu, although he's got the classic fiery head, you know,
mm-hmm.
we very quickly learn that he inhabited the body of one of his cultists, mm-hmm. you know, one of these guys who worships him. And his power, even though this is only a fraction of it in the mortal plane or whatever,
right.
is going to burn out this body soon. And he's kind of holding that over Doctor Strange.
Yep.
He's like, as we're talking, this body is dying.
Yeah, and this guy volunteered for it because he's a cultist.
Right, and that's kind of an ongoing thematic throughout it. But they talk about like kind of everything. Old battles, won and lost, strengths and weaknesses of each other, what's going on in like sort of the mystical world. It's a fascinating issue as they kind of move around through all these sort of mystic realms.
It's a really good, and clearly McKay knows his stuff because he's referencing stories from all the different Doctor Strange.
It also serves probably because I'm sure that he would like to do these the Parley issue every year. This is also serves as exposition. Like, if you're like, oh, I don't know a lot about Dormammu, well, this will give you a little bit of basics on, like, his, at least his battles with Doctor Strange over the years and notable times. I mean, he dropped in the Secret Defenders references in there. That's a pretty deep cut from, what, the 90s?
And it has a very satisfying conclusion.
It does.
His Doctor Strange is smart, and he's kind of a badass.
Yep, good standalone issue. It's interesting to see him kind of, when he kind of tries to tweak the nose of Dormammu and, like, get one up on him, because Dormammu is no slouch, and he's kind of often thinking a few steps ahead, too. And so it's and there's also a guy where, you know, like, oh, if you piss him off, this could be really bad. Yep. So, it's all good stuff.
It's really, really good. It's if you've not been reading this run,
I thought it was...
We still have issues 1 and 2. You can pick up all of it, but you can check out 3 and see if you like it. I love everything Jim McKay's done. He did Black Cat. He did... Moon Knight is what he's been doing right now. He just wrote the New Avengers. Yep. This is definitely a guy. We did that. He did that Mary Jane Black Cat one shot that we all liked.
It was the other guy who did the Secret Invasion. That was
Ryan North.
Ryan North. Yep.
Yeah. Really, really good stuff. The other thing we want to talk about is World Tree number 2. Now, World Tree number 1 came out, sold out, came out, sold out again, and we have the second printing in this week.
Right. This is James Tynion's horror comic, James Tynion of
Something's
Killing the Children, House of Slaughter, Nice House on the Lake. We've been talking him up for a few years now, and he was already making a name for himself on Batman. And this one has to do with like a weird, almost sort of mystically viral presence on the internet, and like a secret thing that goes back to the 90s.
Yep.
And I believe when we read the first issue, Randy, we would probably all agree, one of the most singularly disturbing issues in years.
Disturbing horror comics, yeah.
Yes, because what happens when this, if you're looking at the screen when this thing triggers, terrible things happen. And that happens in the first issue. This second issue follows up on the sort of like people are investigating stuff that happened in the first issue. And there is, like, Randy, I would say this issue is very conversation-based.
Yep.
And I'm just to give away a small thing from the opening sequence. There's a house where a murder has taken place. And I actually, who is the woman who's broken in? She's looking to, like, get pictures
of a... she's a reporter, I think, or someone who has a podcast. She's trying to get a podcast going.
Right.
Yeah.
And she's, like, kind of snuck in, you know, like, kind of what would be behind police lines. And she's taking, you know, nobody in there. Well, she doesn't think there's anybody in there, and she's like on the phone with somebody and taking pictures, and she's talking about, yeah, I know we're skirting what's ethical, but you know, this is our once in a lifetime shot to do something that's really important and big, and this is the huge story. As she's talking, there's a naked woman with a knife that we, the audience, see, that she doesn't, who is walking around, sometimes just steps behind her.
And we saw her, like, a Terminator last issue, like, just murder a police station.
Oh, yeah. She will just, like, violently shred you. And that's just, like, the opening scene. The rest of the issue is, like, very conversational and follows, like,
FBI agents. And then some people who are probably involved in this World Tree's internet cult kind of thing. Yep.
But like one of the things that's so notable, there's a guy and a chick, FBI agent. This guy is clearly a skeevy sort of dude, and his introduction is him talking to his partner for a few pages about basically going to brothel, I guess I'd say, Randy.
Yeah.
And getting what he felt was slightly disappointing service, and the way that he kind of tried to deal with it.
Yes.
Which is, I don't know, what is it, like the Karen of brothels?
Yeah, he's a terrible person.
He's a terrible person, but that was such an amazing way to present his awfulness early on.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, okay, I know what this guy's deal is. And this poor woman is just like, uh-huh, okay, yeah. In the end, they are some of the people investigating it. We see other people who are like the one of the characters from the first one who has a tangential tie but doesn't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the mystery unfolds. There's a lot of really interesting conversations about it that you will be that you will remember and may prompt you to have interesting conversations. Like, even in the midst of all this horror, there's also a woman who's talking about she's like her dating life to somebody else in there. And stuff she's like, I wish that when you're getting just getting to know someone and there's that kind of energy, but everybody you're kind of also keeping secrets from people. She's like, here's some things that I wish I could tell them on, like, date one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is interesting and also very telling of who she is.
There's some good conversations in it, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just fascinated with that. I like that there's that Tinian is has dialogue that's so interesting but isn't like that kind of, oh, everybody sounds the same like Bendis does.
Yeah. The thing that's interesting is that what's the same about Tinian is that what he does is this good conversations, interesting characters, and a slowly unfolding story. That is across Something That's Killed in the Children, Nice House in the Lake, The Closet. That is kind of the thing he does. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's the style, and I'm okay with that as a stylistic tick.
Right, right. That is not, like, exactly a, like, some hacky series.
Yep.
Anyway, yeah, I think, you know, we talked about issue one a lot. This is a... There's only two issues out now. If you're going to get on board the series, there's still time to get on board. Don't be the last person to miss World Tree.
Right. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about some a little bit of news and then some topics.
Randy, before we take that break, we should mention Amazing Spider-Man.
Right.
I know that neither of us are exactly into this, but it's a big thing.
Yeah.
Amazing Spider-Man 26 this week features a notable character death from Marvel. It's all over the news, but I guess we shouldn't say it just in case.
Right.
I think an ill-chosen thing. We also don't particularly think this death is going to stick. We think we've figured out why it happened and what they're going to do with it. But
it's a big issue.
It's a big issue. And you should probably, like, if you want to know what's up, if you want to get in for this sort of dramatic sequence, see if it catches your eye. That's the issue where it happens, Amazing Spider-Man 26. And I think there's going to be a special that will follow up
soon.
There
is a fallen friend kind of thing.
Yep, yes. Yep. We've seen how, like, sometimes this is very big, like when Captain America died. Sometimes it's not as big. We really have no idea how this one is going to play out, but we've done our due diligence and mentioned it.
There we go. All right. Now we're going to take a break. All right, there's not a ton of news this week, so we're going to start that, and we'll roll right into topics. But one of the big bits of news, and this is all stuff that's coming out, is the Micronauts. Last week we talked about ROM.
Yes.
Micronauts is returning to Marvel. They're going to do omnibuses of them.
Right. And the return is kind of in the slightly in quotes the same way it was with ROM.
Right. They're not new.
No new Micronaut stories or ROM stories. But if you've got a little bit of money set aside for a nice omnibus, now the Micronauts are going to get one.
Yep.
And this is, you know, like, known for having... Micronauts had a lot of good artists.
That's that Michael Golden art.
Kicked off with Michael Golden, who's, like... He became, like, the artistic director of, like, Marvel, I think, for a good while. But he... And he's a great artist. He was hugely influential, and I would say far superior to his... to Todd McFarlane, but I know he was very influential on him.
Yep.
And, like, you can see in him the roots of a lot of 90s artists. It's just that his were more merged with craft.
Right.
And, but he didn't do a lot of art. So this is some of his absolute best art. He was sci-fi, kind of slightly dark sci-fi, actually.
It was very much a Star Wars riff.
Absolutely. Absolutely a Star Wars riff. But, again, a little bit more edge than you'd expect at times for something, especially for something based on a toy.
Yeah.
And those first 12 issues were, like, all him, and I think a little bit afterwards. Later on, you got artists like Butch Geis.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to blank on some of the other ones.
This is all Bill Mantlo written, right? This is a big
Bill Mantlo. He wrote the whole thing. Bill Mantlo, a.k.a. creator of Rocket Raccoon, big-time writer of for Marvel in the 70s and 80s. And he also wrote, he wrote ROM. And so he was one of the best guys. He's, like, really your example of... When you take a property that's, like, from another franchise, like a toy line or something like that. Oh, and G.I. Joe from Larry Hama, too.
Right.
This is perfect. These are the best examples you're going to find of taking something like that seriously, of how you can do that. Because, like, when people talk about Micronauts, nobody was like, oh, that cheesy comic based on toys.
No.
When they talk about ROM, they're like, oh, that thing based on a toy that flopped. No, they're always like, oh, I loved ROM.
Yep. next up, Shogun Warriors.
Yes, I don't think that was maybe quite as good, but they should probably go ahead and do that too.
But I actually bought, I've never read, I read, so on Micronauts and ROM, on both of them, I happened to come in right when Secret Wars 2 was happening. This one was very early reading Marvel. So I've read only the Secret Wars 2 tie-ins of both these books.
That is so weird.
That is the only ones I've read. So I don't have any news to stop.
You read some X-Men issues that had ROM bad guys in it.
I did. I've read stuff that had ROM, the Dire Wraiths, in the X-Men.
Right.
But as far as the issues of the single comics, one issue of ROM, one issue of Micronauts, both Secret Wars 2 tie-ins. Because I was collecting all the Secret Wars 2 tie-ins.
Do you know that ROM was based, like, in and around, like, where was it? It was, like,
Pacific Northwest?
Maybe I should look this up while we're talking, but I feel like it's like coal mine country.
Okay.
There was a few stories set in and around there. There was a town that was like maybe an invented town, but it was like central to ROM early on. Now he moved around the globe. He did a lot of stuff. He was chasing alien invaders, but that's just happened to be where he landed at first. And I think it was a riff, Randy, on like those old 50s movies where like an alien ship would crash in a small town.
Yeah.
And so yeah, everybody thought he was like, they thought he was this monstrous alien murderer early on. And you know, he ended up with a few small circle of friends who knew what his deal was, though.
Bug from the Micronauts turned up in Guardians of the Galaxy, so I know him.
Yep.
And I bought the artist edition of Micronauts with some of Michael Golden's art.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was so spectacular.
Yep.
But I'm super looking forward to this. This and ROM both, I never read them, but I know they're, like, legendary. I can't wait to read them. This is a good thing. Because they are pricey, we will not have a lot of these for the shelf. If you want them, pre-order them. We've also discovered that once these come out, usually they sell out, and then they're gone for good.
Right.
So it is a good idea if you want one to let us know, pre-order them.
Yeah, the pre-order thing process looks like this. You contact us however you need to, Facebook, email, talk to us in person.
Ideally, email or talk to us in person is the best way. If you Facebook us, it might get forgotten because we're on our Facebook all the time.
Right. It could get lost. But yeah, we'll put you down for a special order, and we, you know, we'll call you when it arrives, that kind of thing.
I believe this is due in November. ROM is maybe October.
Okay, cool. It's going to be a Bill Mantlo year.
Yeah. So yeah, very cool. Other big news, D&D has announced officially, this stuff was already, we talked about these plans, but they officially got covers and stuff for Bigby's Glory of the Giants and the Practically Complete Guide to Dragons, which are the next two D&D books.
So a giant-centric book and a dragon-centric
book. And a dragon-centric book. And that's the giant one in particular, like, you can play half-giants and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, nice.
There's like 3 or 4 new races. It has an alternate cover. Very nice looking.
Right.
The Practically Complete Dragons does not seem to have a cover just yet, just the regular one. But it's a cool-looking cover. Mm-hmm. So we are taking pre-orders on that. Worth a look. And then they just announced Ticket to Ride Legends of the West, I believe is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And this is
a board game, or, well,
Ticket to Ride is a board game that you might know. It's there's a series of them. But basically, you are riding trains, and it's a very simple. The basics are very simple. You draw cards from a shared pool that are different colored locomotives. You use those to play those matching cards at the table. And transform those into train lines that crisscross the map.
You're laying down train lines and trying to not get cut off by your opponent's train lines and all that. It's a very fun game, great all ages game, good family game. And what they have done with it is turn it into a legacy game. You know, these legacy games where you play and like there's story turns and you play. The game evolves over the course of maybe, you know, think somewhere between like maybe 15 and 20 plays of it. That you might play over the course of weeks or months. And you know, they've done this with Pandemic, Risk, Betrayal at House on the Hill.
Risk was the first one. Pandemic was the second one. They were both created by Rob DeVal is the creator. He's been doing a bunch of stuff lately. And Matt Leacock, who did Pandemic.
Yep.
And they have joined Alan R. Moon, who is the designer of Ticket to Ride, to make this. So it's basically like, this is like the three tenors of gaming.
Yeah.
Like, these are big game designers. They are working together to make what is probably going to be a fantastic legacy game. They talked about, basically, they don't want to, they like, Ticket to Ride is very accessible. They don't want to mess with it. They wanted to be, like, you could still play a Ticket to Ride game, but they didn't want to poke and prod around a little bit. So it is still competitive. You take the role of 19th century pioneers, and there's plastic train cards, but also, like, event cards and newspaper clippings and an overarching story that ties together 12 of its 20 to 90 minute plays.
Okay.
It's coming out in November, or at least that's the current release date.
Did you tell me earlier it has something to do with like American folk tales?
So they they were talking about it. It's like trains are 19th century, and Rob Devio or Devo, who's saying, he's like, so, you know, news delivery, we weren't on Instagram. Like, news delivery was things happen over there. They always seem a little larger in life. By the time you get there and see what's there, it may not match what you heard. So it's fables and tales and fireside conversations on the frontier.
Okay.
So that is kind of the theme of it all.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited to see this. I really liked the Legacy games that I've played. I love Ticket to Ride. I've loved Pandemic Legacy.
Yep.
I will definitely be picking this one up. All right. And that takes us into our news, because we have a couple games that we have played recently.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some board game, card game type stuff.
Yeah. So first, I'm going to talk about Thunder Road Vendetta, which is an original game in 1985.
Yep.
That was about sort of car warfare, you know, post-apocalyptic Mad Max style.
This game actually existed?
This game existed in 1985.
Okay, I thought you were saying that the game is set in then, but no, this wasn't, I didn't know it was a remake.
The game was called Thunder Road.
Okay.
And it was I never played it. This is one of those, like, Dark Tower, one of those that people knew about.
Yeah.
I did not know about it. But basically, you're on a race in a car that's armed, and so you're shooting other cars and knocking them around the roads and that kind of thing.
In other words, probably very inspired by Death Race 2000.
And Mad Max and that kind of thing. Yeah, Car Wars, probably.
Yep.
So, this is a top-to-bottom remake with some notable designers on it. It's Restoration Games, which I believe is either Rob Devo or Matt Leacock. I think it's Rob Devo's company.
Okay.
They have done a variety of games. Return to Dark Tower is theirs.
Yep.
They do the Unmatched games. They took over that.
Yeah.
So these guys do a lot of good games.
This guy's got his name all over our podcast this week.
He does. And this is the new version of it, which I picked up and played with some friends. And it is a ton of fun. So it's the base game is 2 to 4 players. It's got little tiles that are like racing. They're like the road.
Uh-huh.
And there's a center of road. There's a road thing in the middle. And then there's there's like some off-the-road stuff. And on your turn, you have 3 cars. You've got a small, medium, and large car.
Yep.
And you roll a set of 4 dice, and you put 1 of each die on the car, and that number is how far you move.
Okay.
You might notice there's 4 dice, 3 cars.
Yep.
You also can put one, and you can put them on different maneuvers. And that includes, you can send in your chopper for an airstrike to shoot one of their cars. You can use nitro to boost your move.
Right.
You can use drift, so you can drift through a space without crashing into another car. Because one of the big things is you run into a car and you roll 2 dice to like determine whether it's you or them that gets bumped,
uh-huh.
and how far they get bumped.
Uh huh.
And there are also obstacles on the road, which could be anything from you flip it over, it's an all-slick, or it's nothing, it's a fake out,
right.
Or it could be a mine, or it could be a car wreck that you don't got to deal with. And then there's also repairs in case your car gets knocked out. Because you get 2 damage cards, and then your car is knocked out.
Uh-huh.
And you basically keep going each turn, shooting each other's cars, knocking each other's cars around, until one player is knocked out, at which point the end of the road turns up, and the first person across the finish line wins.
One shall stand. One
when
shall
we
fall.
Played, there were 3 people, and the last guy won by killing everybody else, so he didn't have to cross the finish line. He was just last one standing.
Okay, that sounds very Death Race 2000 or Mad Max.
It's a blast. The cars are a little 3D. They're little. They got a little ink wash on them.
Yep.
The little helicopters have a spinning blade, like you can spin the little thing. It's a very cool little looking game.
That is pretty cool.
But yeah, super fun. Simple enough, but the strategies of when to move and when to shoot and all that kind of stuff are very intricate. There's also a road die where if you stay on the road the whole time, you get bonus movement.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't, then you don't. And there's a lot of
interesting.
A lot of you know, when you're when
you've
you're
got,
like
you've
oh,
got some strategies for,
yeah,
for
like should
victory.
I risk going through this obstacle to stay on the road or should I go off the road? You know that kind of thing.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Randy, how long does that take to play?
So this was our first game. So I think it took us about an hour and a half.
I mean, that's pretty fast.
I think it plays in like 30 to 40 minutes.
Okay.
Once you get everybody on board and you get people not doing the analysis paralysis, well, when am I going to move? We're going to put the. If everybody's like, okay, here's what we do, it'll be a little faster.
I feel like, I don't know why, but I think it's somehow the combination of 2 giant things in American culture, cars and guns,
yep.
somehow will always have its grip on me. And so the idea of, like shootouts on the highways and all that stuff sounds fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
In fiction.
the other game, Dave, that you and I played
yes.
is Marvel Champions. We played with our staffer, John.
Yeah.
who built our decks for us.
And just as a real quick rewind, like a couple weeks prior, I had done a little test drive with John, just trying the game out for the first time.
But not with guns.
But not with guns. And we did what like is essentially the starter mission in it. There's three linked missions. This is a card game, a deck, sort of a living card game. Mm-hmm. With the core box set has sort of three missions in it, and you work together to try and take on villains. And the first one is the Rhino, and then the second one is Claw, mm-hmm. Master of Sound, mm-hmm. and the third one is who we played last night, Ultron. And it was a tough fight.
We thought we were going to lose the whole time.
So let's say who our characters were.
So the decks, you build the deck, and the game comes with five.
Right.
We've talked about this before. I talked about this when it came out like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, but we can do a quick reminder.
But it comes with Spider-Man, She-Hulk,
Cap.
Cap, Black Panther, and Captain Marvel.
Okay.
Those are your five starters. And then there are 24, maybe more, Euro packs you can buy.
And essentially, when you can build a customized deck, just like Magic or something mm-hmm, like that, mm-hmm. but you always have to let's say you're doing She-Hulk, which was one of the ones we had.
Yep.
You always use all of She-Hulk's unique cards, which is like what 15
cards. Yep.
15 cards, and then you build out the rest from options that could be found in other decks.
So you put 25 to 35 of the cards.
Yep.
And they have an aspect. There's aggression, protection, leadership, and one more I can't ever remember.
Justice. Yeah.
And I thought there was like a standard deck. Like, here's a deck of 25 aggression cards. But no, each time you buy a pack of cards, each time you buy like Miss Marvel or Cyclops or Venom or whatever,
yep.
it adds 20, I think, or 15 or whatever new aggression cards. Some of which you'll have seen before, some of which are new characters. So, like, for example, we had some of the champions in my deck. I think you had Ironheart.
Right.
Or that might have been Nova. But anyway, I had characters that were like champions who were in my deck. They were leadership cards.
Yep.
And so you take these, you get these, as you build up these decks, you build a deck of 40 to 50 cards, and you can build this, like, here's Miss Marvel with a leadership aspect, and she's got Avengers. I think John built this deck for me, so I had, like, Hawkeye, and Squirrel Girl, and yep. I forget who all else I had in there. I think I had Goliath. I feel like I maybe had War Machine.
Yep.
Or Iron Man or something like that. So you had all these characters who will turn up on your turns.
Right. And in general, your cards are going to be, as you draw your hands in the game to take on the bad guys, a mixture of things that help you attack, things that help you defend, allies you can put out, mm-hmm. and various methods of like, oh, I need to do this so that on a future turn I can do this.
Right.
You know, like sometimes you're sort of setting the stage, or you're using some piece of technology the character has that helps him out. And then, like, we play around where we all do our thing, and then the bad guys get around.
Yeah.
And the bad guys can do some nasty stuff on their round. It's kind of automated.
One of the cool things is, like, this is co-op, so all of us are playing together. You play 2 to 4 people.
You all win together?
You all lose together. And the bad guy has a scheme that they're doing.
Yep.
So on your turn, if you're, like, really badly hurt, you can flip, once per turn, you can flip from your hero side to your alter ego side.
Yep.
And your alter ego side doesn't draw attacks. Like, you won't get attacked that turn. You won't take any health damage.
Right.
But it means the villain can scheme more freely because you're in your secret identity. Deal with right. your secret identity stuff.
So they build up these little tokens on their scheme card and that just show that they're advancing their evil plans.
Right.
And at a certain point, though, there's a number that they'll hit, and it, like, another
that,
scheme
that
will
scheme
unfold.
That scheme and another one unfolds, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, sometimes it's pretty cool. It's like, oh, Ultron is trying to get the nuclear secrets. Oh, if that scheme ends, he's got the nuclear secrets.
Yeah,
and so you flip the card over, and yet you see what the next part of the adventure is. And obviously you want to try and keep those down, so, like, very often one player or like what might be focusing on like I'm trying to keep the scheme at bay.
Right.
Someone else is like I'm trying to do direct damage to Ultron. Someone else might be like I'm trying to deal with Ultron's drones.
Yeah, that was one of Ultron's cool mechanics. He basically just throwing drones at you the whole time.
Right. And I had seen the occasional attacker that was like when I played the Rhino one that was an ally of his that would show up like oh he sent his buddy the Shocker from the Sinister Six to come after my character. But no, like, Ultron, like, every turn, he was, like, knocking out drones that not only, they basically, like, took one of your cards out of play, which was nasty.
Yeah, one of your cards becomes a drone.
Right, and you just set it aside, and now it's a drone, and it's, like, going to be attacking you on your turn. So he's, like, targeted you with a drone.
Yep.
Later on, as he got worse and more worse, he had, like, upgraded drones.
Yep.
And I'm going to rewind slightly and say our characters were John played She-Hulk.
Yep.
Randy, you were Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan.
Yep.
And
hey, what's going on with Kamala Khan in the comics?
What's that?
What's going on with Kamala Khan in the comics? Oh, never mind.
let's retract that statement. and then I was playing Nova, specifically the Sam Alexander.
Yep.
Version of
they
him.
They were both champions together.
Right, and one of the very cool things is that we got to synergize that occasionally, and like a lot of my cards, of course, have like little tags on this.
Yeah.
This is a common thing in a lot of these living card games is tags that like, oh, to have just like sometimes X-Men or champions or whatever on
right.
it, and you're like, you can protect, extend your shield to anybody who has a champions tag on it.
That was a clutch card that you played, because you played card that was like, champions take no damage this turn, and I had two allies who were champions, and my character was a champion, Dave's character was a champion.
Right, and some of us were like reeling, like from a lot of yep. Ultron's attacks, and are like, oh, we might lose some of these allies in one turn.
And we knocked all that damage off for an entire turn, it was really great.
Yeah, very, very cool. And so there's dramatic moments that happen in this game because it is, this is both what I thought was a little complex about it and a little beyond my pay grade. Not that I couldn't understand it, but that like strategizing was a little difficult for me. It's fairly freeform. You're going to draw like 5 or 6 cards mm-hmm. on average, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less for various reasons. And then you can play them in any order along with enacting stuff from any of your allies, yourself.
Right.
And sometimes even some other things that you've established, like a base or something like that.
Right, right. I had the helicarrier.
You had the helicarrier, which was super cool. The helicarrier, I mean, it actually is very logical. The helicarrier allowed us to bring essentially the payment that you do for, well, I don't want to get too deep into that mechanic, but when you have to bring in an ally or whatever, you yep. have to sort of pay for it,
yep.
and it made it cheaper.
Yep.
And like, yeah, of course, helicarrier gets them around.
To get into it real quick, the very simple, each sure. card basically has a resource.
Yep.
And a cost.
Yep.
And you can spend the card. Dizzy Lorcana works similar to this, actually.
Okay.
I've seen several games. So basically, you can either spend the card as a resource.
Yep.
Or you can play the card.
Yeah.
So you have to sort of choose in your hand, like, okay, this card, I'm not going to get its effect. I'm going to use its resource so I can play this other card.
Right.
And that's the balancing act.
Yeah, essentially, some of the cards you give up as fuel to trigger other cards.
Right.
And that's like one of the, it's once you realize that simple mechanic, well, then it's kind of fun. You're like, oh, I'm not losing these cards like boohoo. I have to stress and strain over it every time,
yeah.
which I kind of early on I was like, well, this seems like a good card. I hate to just use it yep. as fuel.
Yeah.
But like, that's what you do.
That's what you do.
So you can, once that kind of becomes clear, you can start making those choices much quicker and you'll start to recognize like, oh, this is one of his big attacks. Obviously, I'm not going to use this for fuel. I'm going to find something else that will fuel this.
Right.
Randy, I don't know about you, but like there was some neat highs and low moments. And for me near the end, One of the big things was I had a power that I was essentially able to chain a bunch of stuff together.
You had a big turn.
It's like his his Nova power.
Yeah.
It was actually an easy one to trigger, and essentially anything that he, I think, was anything he took out with his attack,
yeah.
He would be able to draw another card.
Yep.
And drones are annoying, but they only take one hit to knock out.
Right.
And you can attack any, both Ultron, like the big bad, as well as any enemies he's sent to fight any of you.
Yep.
So you can help out friends and stuff. I was able to take out like 5 dudes. And that allowed me to draw 5 cards.
Yep.
That is a huge, huge thing.
Well, your hand submit was 5, so basically you got this extra turn worth of cards.
Yeah, so it was crazy. It was like, if this was in the comic, this would be the big scene where it's his moment to shine,
yep.
or you know, an issue that was devoted to just him or whatever.
And you know, John had that with She-Hulk. He did a couple big bashes.
Yes.
And I got to do a few things. One of them is Hawkeye had this ability when I put him in play where he had like 4 shots.
Yes.
And so he could take out drones. So basically, as these drones keep showing up, Hawkeye's just knocking them down with his arrows.
Super cool.
And then Miss Marvel had the ability.
He's especially good at that, yeah.
Miss Marvel had the ability to call a card back. I had another card.
Yes.
So basically, Hawkeye got knocked out. She brought him immediately back and killed 4 more drones.
Yeah. That was, I thought, one of her coolest powers.
Yep.
And I believe was kind of like an slight abstraction of her like stretching power, like she's like not so fast.
That particular one was another card.
Oh,
but
okay.
She didn't have ability to like call cards back.
Yeah, that's fun.
I got to do the final. We got Ultron down to 1 health.
Yep.
And
it
was great because the final shot I had, I did like 16 damage, which is a lot of damage in this game.
To be clear, the way this kind of works is there's sometimes two. I'm trying to remember if there was 3 versions of Rhino we fought, but essentially, like when he started out, what did he have? 60 hit points,
yeah.
something like that. And you whittle him down. And, you know,
a fresh new version of
and
it.
And a fresh new version, because, you know, it's kind of like the villain comes back renewed and, right. You know, is and all that. It's just, it's like it's built into the story arc.
And usually has, suddenly he was much tougher, his abilities were tougher.
Yes. Near the end, he activated an ability where he took, like, and this could have been for any of us, it happened to be for me, but I forget if it happened to somebody. Oh, it did, because with Titania, right?
Yeah.
He essentially will draw out every... When you buy a hero deck, they come with an arch enemy.
Yeah.
And he, like, triggers their arch enemy. So, like, this enemy of Nova showed up that was, like, super dangerous.
Yep.
And I was like, man, this guy is going to pound me to a pulp if I... And very quickly. So we're like, man, we all got to just do everything we can to take out Ultron before all the bad stuff he's unleashed on us.
Yep. It was looking bad.
Destroys us.
Yeah. And his schemes had a ton of points. Like, he was going to advance some of his schemes.
Yep.
There were two side schemes going.
Yep.
Like, it was looking rough.
So John and I unleashed as best we could on him. And it whittled him down to one hit point.
Yep.
And your coup de grace, Randy, was like the mother of all coup de grace.
Yeah, I have, so the cards I have was like, it was Big Hands, which is an attack, Embiggen, which is a very Miss Marvel thing, that doubled the damage, and then I had Hawkeye and Squirrel Girl, and I had a card that let Hawkeye do extra damage if he sacrificed himself. So it's basically like the big last charge of the Avengers.
Yep.
It was a very, very
if
cool, very satisfying.
If you imagine in the comic, Kamala would be the one to say Avengers Assemble.
Yeah. It was very cool, and it's got that sort of vibe to it. Like, you see all these characters you like, and there's moments. Like, they really, whoever's designing these games, they know the Marvel Universe.
Even though there is not a story per se, it's not hard to kind of imagine a narrative built around the events in it. Like, a few-issue storyline of, like, them fighting against Ultron. Not just literally one giant big brouhaha, but also one where it's like, okay, yeah, at times I'm off doing some research in my civilian identity, but there's still things going on.
One of the neat things about the secret identity thing is everybody has a flip card.
Yep.
And when you're in your secret identity, that's when you can recover health. So, like, if you get really, really low on health, you spend a little turn in your secret identity. You don't do any damage.
Yep.
And the schemes advance a little bit more, but you can recover. You take a breath. And it does simulate that, oh, yeah, I was off doing my secret identity stuff.
Yeah.
And Kamala has stuff like, she had Bruno and Nakia and her brother as cards who only active when she was in her secret identity.
Yeah, so you're going to get supporting cast for characters you like, which is really cool. By the way, Randy, I also thought Squirrel Girl was one of the coolest allies.
She was neat.
Squirrel Girl unleashes her squirrels,
yes,
and they just each do like 1 point of damage. But as we were saying, those drones, for the most part, until Ultron amped them up at the end, were just 1 point.
So Squirrel Girl shows up and her squirrels take out all the drones.
They shred the drones.
Yeah, it's great.
Like, it's very cool. Anyway, yes, very fun game, pretty deep. But
so much, so expandable. Like, they've got packs for Spider-Man that's got, like, Miles and Spider-Gwen in it.
That's right.
And it comes with villains, too. Like, they do these packs that have, like, three or four villains. There's an X-Men pack. There's an X-Force pack coming.
Did they do the Wrecking Crew?
There's a Wrecking Crew pack. There's a The Hood pack.
Wow, that's pretty
deep. There's, they've got the box sets. There's Red Skull. There's, I'm trying to think.
Is Doc Ock in there somewhere?
Doc Ock's in there somewhere.
Okay.
Oh, maybe he's in the Sinister Spider-Man one.
Oh, I bet so.
But there's like four or five big ones. There's also a Guardians box.
Yep, Guardians
of
the Galaxy.
There's a Thanos box and a Guardians box.
Yep.
So you can get all the Guardians. There's a huge, it's expandable. It comes out every few months. They just add X-Men. They're going to do X-Force.
Mm-hmm.
It's very fun. I've been buying all these as we go on, and I've been really wanting to play it. And playing this now and seeing the deck buildings aspect, I'm like, oh, I feel like I've just unlocked a whole new set of things I can do.
Right, because it's like one of those things where, yes, the basics of the game, fairly easy to pick up. The depth of mm-hmm. deck building and like what you can do and the kind of type, like you could, all those four aspects, you can take any given character and give them, build it around any one of those aspects. Mm-hmm. But the way you can do that, even within that, you could build, like, an infinite number of slightly different versions of that.
You can build and rebuild. And the thing is, also, like, if that doesn't sound fun to you, you can just run out of the deck. Like, you could take it out of the box and play it that way.
Yeah, right. And I'm sure there's, like, a zillion lists of just, like, here's a good deck to make online.
For sure,
John had built our decks for us. Thank you, John. You did a good job.
Yep.
And, like, it was neat when we would see, like, oh, so Nova's particularly good at doing blank, and I put some cards in that are particularly good at helping him do that thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Really good. All right. That'll do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more and with Nick.
Yes.
Until that time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.